Welcome to the Development Podcast, a podcast that offers practical strategies to further develop yourself, your organization, and those around you. Learn how to maximize your influence by hearing from entrepreneurs, industry professionals, and business leaders share about their ideas and experiences. I'm your host, Martin Manosolvas. Thank you again for tuning in. Hi everyone, thank you so much for joining in. Today, I'm excited to have Meredith Douglas Morales join us to share thoughts around diversity and inclusion. I think that this is a topic that should certainly be embraced, especially within the workplace, but also in other settings like educational settings. Diversity and inclusion are crucial and important aspects of how successful a business operates, but more than that, it really is all about people, right? And diversity is about having a culture that values uniqueness in people. And inclusion, on the other hand, is ensuring that underrepresented groups feel a sense of belonging, a sense of worth, and that at the end of the day, they know they contribute to an organization and can take part in the company's success. Meredith is a senior global program manager at LinkedIn and has held several roles that have focused on implementing diverse and inclusive programs and recruitment strategies in the workplace that are really geared towards helping underrepresented groups feel a sense of belonging and worth. Meredith, thank you again so much. I'm excited to hear your thoughts. How are you doing?
Hello, everyone, and thanks so much, Martin, for this opportunity and just for really leaning into this space. Diversity and inclusion is a journey and it's not a destination. And so as we're all on this learning journey together, it's really, you know, important to create these continual opportunities for this level of dialogue and discussion. So I just want to thank you again. So I've been in diversity and inclusion for just about 13 years. And I always joke that I got into it when it wasn't cool. Over 10 years ago, you know, companies were kind of at this place where D&I was something that was kind of like a check the box and for compliance, right? Like, did you post on the jobs? Yes, we posted the jobs on these boards. Did you go to the career fair? Yep, we went to the career fair. And, you know, that really wasn't moving the needle because you were only required to demonstrate a good faith effort based on the government requirements. And so, you know, now we've, accelerated the D&I journey beyond compliance to really what I think is a pivotal turning point with all the things that we're seeing with the social unrest, resulting from the recent Black Lives Matter, killings, and the protests are more diverse than I've ever seen in my career. And, you know, that's really promising. And companies are leaning into this topic, not because they feel like they need to check the box. I mean, some still are, right? This is a journey. But I feel like for the first time in a very long time, companies are having discussions at all levels that they haven't had before and leaning into this in a more authentic way. And that's really encouraging because it will help us truly move the needle forward and continue to see progress in this space. So in my career, in the 13 years that I've been doing this, I've focused primarily on talent acquisition. So helping companies anywhere from industries like higher education to the government. I used to be the national diversity lead for the Federal Reserve System, all 12 banks and the Board of Governors, to consulting practices, and now I'm in tech. And, in each of those, I've worked with companies to help them create opportunities on how do you identify talent from underrepresented groups? What does underrepresented groups mean at your company, right? Why are we doing this work? Finding the why is really important. And how do we do it authentically and inclusively in a way that will work and be sustainable? So I spent a significant part of my career focused on opening those doors and creating opportunities for candidates from underrepresented groups, all the way from campus through executive level, to get hired at top companies. Recently, I've been at LinkedIn for almost 3 years. And in the time I've been at LinkedIn, I spent my first 2.5 years focused on building out programs that will enable LinkedIn on a broader scale to attract, include and retain diverse professionals through our talent acquisition work. Recently, in the last 9 months, I've had the opportunity to elevate my work and join our diversity and inclusion and belonging team, which is a global team where now my focus is on helping our employee resource groups globally at LinkedIn be recognized and developed as the future leaders and the pipeline of how LinkedIn thinks about internal mobility and growing diverse talent.
Absolutely. And I love how intentional you've been with applying these programs and executing them effectively. What are other ways that we can foster diversity and inclusion within the workplace?
So, you know, I mentioned earlier, starting with the why, in order to truly foster a diverse, inclusive, and I'll add in two additional words, equitable culture, you have to create the sense of belonging. Right. So at LinkedIn, where I have the privilege to work, LinkedIn's mission is to create diversity, inclusion, and belonging. Because you can have diversity, right? You can have the mix, and you can have inclusion, right? Where people are included, right? They have a seat at the table. But if they're not given an equitable opportunity to speak, right? If they don't feel heard and valued at that table, then they're not going to feel like they belong. Right. And so while you may have the visible or invisible differences, if people don't feel like they are in an equitable position and they're not comfortable and feel like they belong, then you're not going to ever see the true value of diversity and inclusion. So, you know, you need all of the components in order to foster, a strong workplace culture. And in order to get there, you have to figure out, why are we doing this? Right. What does this mean to us? Because there's so many different facets of diversity and inclusion. And, you know, how does that work at your company in a way that everyone can authentically practice, whether it's from the top down with the CEO establishing what the company's position and belief is on it, and then the bottom up. How do you bring people along in that journey where they feel, included, and they feel like there's a place for everyone and not excluded, right? Sometimes we hear that there are, white males who may feel like, well, where do I fit into this? So you want to make sure that everyone feels included and not excluded and understands why we're going along this journey and where we're hoping for it to lead to.
Right. And I think that's so important. But what helps you, advocate for that change and get fellow colleagues on board?
So diversity, inclusion, and belonging is, it's work that is both head and heart, right? Mm-hmm. You can't, I can come in with, a lot of data and facts, right. and that's great, right? Data definitely helps validate points. But, if you don't believe, right, then it's not really going to make a difference. And so, the way that I approach this is by, understanding where companies and individuals and leaders are in their own D&I journey. Is this something that they're comfortable with or uncomfortable with? Do they understand bias and that everyone has bias? And it's not a punitive thing, right? It's just something that we need to be aware of and understand tactics on how to manage our bias.
Right.
Understanding if they truly believe in this work, how diverse are their networks? How involved are they? Or maybe they haven't had an opportunity to get started. Maybe they're not sure where to get started. But there's very few things I haven't heard. And there's very few conversations I haven't had. And so I always let people know, I'm open to candid discussion, because that's really the only way that we're going to have a truly productive conversation. And within that, creating that safe space and that brave space for people to truly reflect on where they are in this journey, think about, their own privileges or lack thereof, their own understanding of D&I and how, that plays a role in their life or how they haven't really considered it. Having that conversation to connect this work to them, right? Moments of diversity or moments of where they felt like they didn't belong, right? To help them understand this work on a different level, on a personal level. And then in addition to that, always supporting, with the wealth of data that's out there, because after a decade, we finally do have tons of research that shows that diversity, inclusion, and belonging is not just about fairness, right? It is truly imperative to business outcomes, and data supports that it, you know, helps companies be more profitable, as well as, you know, sustainable with a more engaged workforce.
Absolutely. And it definitely does create that sort of engaging workplace. So what other benefit or value does, you know, investing in diverse and inclusive programs or initiatives bring to an organization?
So, you know, diversity is really important for all of the reasons that we've discussed. But there are some statistics out there that I mentioned a moment ago. So two that I can share with you, you know, Harvard Business Review has been studying diversity, inclusion, equity, and belonging for a very long time. And I would highly recommend if those of you who are listening to this are newer to this topic and want to understand more about it, HBR, Harvard Business Review, has an awesome, awesome 2-second video called Why Fewer Diverse Candidates Are Hired. And so it's a really simple way to get a really quick understanding about some of these systemic biases that can happen in company processes to really give you a deeper understanding of this. But HBR, through a lot of their studies, the most recent one in 2019 showed that there is statistics significance between companies that have diverse management teams and those that do not. They see a higher revenue mix, achieving almost 19% more on average in higher revenues than companies that do not have diversity, particularly at the management level. Similarly, McKinsey found that organizations with diverse boards globally tend to, on average, have 43% of reported higher profits by having diversity reflected from the top down. And, you know, this work is imperative because we all know that we're going through the census right now. And, you know, we haven't really talked broadly enough about, you know, what are the projections. So diversity is no longer something that companies can afford to really sit back on because the country is changing. And so, you know, in a recent projection by the Brookings Institute that projected the outcome of the current census that we're going through, Brookings found that by the year 2045, the US will be minority majority, which basically means individuals within the US that have historically been identified as the minority, right, will now be the majority, right? So there will be a higher level of people of from underrepresented groups, particularly people of color, versus people that identify as Caucasian. And, you know, while 2045 seems far away, this is really, really critical because the shift is already happening. So according to this recent Brookings study on the US Census projections, those that are under the age of 18 in this year, 2020, are already minority majority. And so companies really need to think about this because as we progress toward 2027, we're going to hit a tipping point where the labor force will start to see the children that are under 18 now become, you know, fit into the labor force demographic of the ages 18 to 29 and where they will be the majority. And, you know, even though individuals from minority groups, historically minority groups, will now be in the majority, it doesn't mean that all of a sudden diversity is going to get better, right? All of a sudden, you're suddenly going to have all of this representation. Because what's not moving at that same pace are the opportunities. Opportunities and access, particularly in these virtual environments, to education, to technology, to have online learning, to, you know, for economic opportunity, right? I was reading an article this morning in the New York Times around the impact of COVID on schools. And not only is there inequitable access to Wi-Fi, internet, and laptops, you know, in lower income communities, there is also inequitable economic opportunity where you have students whose parents don't have the privilege of working from home. And so those students are not able to log online, even with the tools and resources provided, because maybe they have to care for young children while their parents go to work. So we really have to think about how do we lean into this, right? Not just from the perspective of hiring, but what are we doing now as a company to start to narrow these economic disparities to create more equitable opportunities for the changing workforce?
Those stats are definitely very, very interesting. So if there's so much benefit behind it, you know, what's holding companies back from investing?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely, it's a great question, and it's multifaceted. And, you know, no two companies are alike. So I'll give a sample of what's holding back some companies that tends to be the most common things that I've seen in my career. And, you know, from my perspective, I would say, you know, you've got some companies that haven't had to think about this, right? So let's look at the tech industry. So I shared earlier in the podcast that my experience has primarily been in non-tech industries. In fact, I spent the majority of my career diversifying organizations, primarily in financial services. And when you look at financial services, companies that are in that sector, you know, became regulated and mandated by the government back in 2000 and around 2007. No, I'm sorry, 2008, during the economic crisis, they became regulated and mandated through something called the Dodd-Frank Act, which a lot of people are familiar with in terms of how the government protects individuals and banks from failing. But a lot of people don't realize that Dodd-Frank also, during that time, created a clause that requires financial institutions to have an office of minority women and inclusion is what it was called at the time, and to have specific strategies on how they're going to do this. And so looking down the road years later, by default, you know, the financial services as an industry still has work to do, but on average has around 30 to 35% representation from underrepresented groups, primarily people of color. Okay. Yeah. And then you look at, in contrast, the tech industry. And the tech industry, and this is not just in engineering, which I think is a consistent misnomer. Tech is an industry, meaning all facets, sales, marketing, finance divisions that are part of tech companies. As an industry, on average, you're looking at something from 1 to 2% of representation from underrepresented groups in comparison to 30%. Right, from financial services. And so the reason for that is when you think about tech, you know, tech grew very differently. Financial services firms are highly regulated, right, hundreds of years old, and have had time to think about this and guidance and mandates to start to get this right. Whereas when you reflect on how a lot of these tech companies got started, right, like my company right now is 17 years old. We're a teenager. And, you know, tech companies are even younger, right? They're startups. I think Google's just over 20. This is not a very long time. And when you look at how these companies got started, it was oftentimes friends. And when you look at, you know, the network of friends, when you look at your own network, how diverse is your network, right? And so in the case of tech, in these instances, when we think about the founders of Apple, the founders of Microsoft, right, all the companies, it is very rare that you see that they had a diverse network. And so, you know, they hired who they trusted. Who do you know is and who do you trust? Right. Versus starting with, we need to get this right. We need to be diverse and inclusive. Tech runs fast. And so there isn't often the time to be thoughtful and, you know, think about things end to end. It runs at breakneck speed. And so while you've got these giants, right, that have and continue to be incredible companies, they are now making up for the deficit, right, the talent debt that they acquired over the years from running so quickly. So it's not that tech doesn't believe in this holistically as an industry. They just have a debt because they were running so fast and didn't have really the time to slow down and think about the makeup of the workforce. But I do feel like, you know, tech is really leaning into it, particularly at LinkedIn, and I'm really encouraged by the efforts that tech companies are making. I think another challenge that companies face is that, you know, to your point, this can be an uncomfortable topic. For me, it's something I can talk about all day. But, you know, this can be uncomfortable for people who have grown up in privilege and haven't really had to think about it or haven't really been exposed to much diversity. And so it can be something that if it's not in front of you, if it's something that you don't understand, that you don't value because you haven't really had to think about it, it can feel uncomfortable as something that, you know, either you don't understand why it's important or you understand that it's important, but you don't understand where to get started.
Very interesting. So what would you say are some ways to hire, engage, and retain diverse talent within the workplace?
So, you know, it's really important that you understand the why. I can't express that right. enough, because if you go about this inauthentically, mm-hmm. then candidates from underrepresented groups are going to suss that out. And trust works both ways, right? The employer has to trust, right? The company has to trust the people that they hire, but the candidate has to trust that this is a great company to work for. Will Absolutely. I be included? Will I be valued? Will I be respected? Will I be promoted? Or are you just hiring me, right, for the optics to say that you're diverse and inclusive? So it's really important to be authentic in recognizing where you are as a company in your journey. Don't shy away from talking about that, because there's nothing worse than being hired into a company claiming that you're diverse and inclusive, and then the person gets in and they're the only one, right? Because they weren't prepared. But it's a much different conversation if you share that you're early in the journey. This is something that you value. Here are some of the ways that you're starting to move the needle forward, but you still have work to do. And having that level of transparency, so when the person comes in, right, and they're the only one or two, right, they're not shocked and surprised, right? You've had an open conversation, you've level set expectations from the beginning, and you're really clear on why you're doing this work. So creating mm-hmm. that trust is important. Secondarily is communicating that. Right? What's your talent brand? So you can do all the, you know, recruiting tactics in the world, right? But if you are not truly an inclusive, equitable, or even friendly employer to work with, that's going to get out there, you know, through incredible resources like Blind for those who use that app, or right. Glassdoor, right? And you know, reviews are out there. There is transparency, and so you can do all the things, but if the word on the street is that the experience right. of those from underrepresented groups or even from any group has not been a positive one, then mm-hmm. that will be out there, and your efforts will not be very fruitful, right?
Right.
So it's really important to understand your talent brand, control your narrative, tell your story. Be transparent about the why and the how, and then, you know, engage the top, right? Make sure that your leadership, your CEO and top down believe in this, and not just that they believe, but are they practicing it? What do their executive teams look like? What do their direct reports look like? How is your company thinking about internal mobility and promotion, right? Not just bringing candidates in the door, but how are you accelerating those that are already here? Mm-hmm. and developing them, which leads to retention.
Right.
So that's really important as well. And I would say the third bucket is to also control your talent brand internally, right? Not just the external story on the street, but how do the employees that work for you feel? Do they know how to move up in the company?
Right.
Do they understand the unwritten rules? Right? How are they supported so that even if they are having a great experience, if they don't feel like they're growing and developing, they don't understand how to be internally, how to have internal, mobility, then that's going to hinder your efforts as well. And then the last thing is, I think, companies tend to over-focus on external recruitment, right? Let's get them in the door from all of these, you know, diverse channels that we haven't used before. But, you know, they're not really having the conversation of what happens when they get in the door and who do they see when they look up? So at LinkedIn, we think about it as the look up gap. And we find that, you know, you can focus on hiring externally and, you know, having, you know, very diverse intern populations. I think a lot of companies tend to default to diversity at the entry level, middle manager space. But when you get into leadership, diverse leaders hire diverse teams, right? You don't have to, it's more infrequent that you need to create the business case of the why, right? And so that can accelerate your efforts, because when people in the company look up, they see people who look like them. And when you see it, you can be it. And in addition to that, when you are looking to bring in external talent, you have to make less of a business case and less of a fight to have a diverse slate when working with a diverse leadership team.
Right. And I absolutely agree with that. I think that it's not enough to have numbers, right? We need to ensure that we do have inclusive work culture for employees to feel included. So what are some ways to better listen to your employees so that they can feel that sense of inclusion and belonging?
Absolutely. I love that last point you made, right? It's not about metrics. And this is what we say at LinkedIn. Diversity is a value. It's not a metric. Right. It's not hurry up and achieve it. Right. You can't hurry up and achieve creativity. You can't hurry up and achieve efficiency. Right. You would never say that. So it's very important to view diversity as a value and not a metric and start from there. In terms of what companies can do to help employees feel, included and like they belong, create not just tactics to bring diverse talent in to recruit them in, but really think about the overall life cycle. What's the experience once they get in the door, right? Are you equitable in how you're supporting employees in finding out about, career opportunities internally? Do they have the same visibility? Are you supporting, your employees with the ability to have diverse networks with leadership teams? Do you have an advocacy program for, to help your senior leaders understand the importance, not just of mentorship, but of advocacy to champion for those that, are doing great work at the company and maybe less visible, right? But are rock stars in their own right. Do you have an employee resource group? How are you including them in the conversation, right? For us, by us, right? How are you asking them what's missing? What could the company be doing better? What would they like to see? Are you doing an employee pulse survey on how comfortable do they feel? Do they feel like they can bring themselves to work every day? Do they feel like their ideas are heard and valued, or are there still some opportunities there?
Absolutely. So as we begin to wrap this up, I'd like to focus my last question around how we can be applying this within educational settings. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this. How can students take action regarding clubs, organizations, and university activities?
We talked earlier about the Brookings projections.
Right.
Representation of the U.S. And I think, one of the changing tides is that the student population right now is more diverse than in prior years, right? Mm-hmm. And so what's one of the things that's changing in the conversation about D&I is more visible than ever. So I have found in my conversations with students and early career job seekers, or even, seasoned job seekers, there's more of an expectation for a company to have diversity and inclusion. And there's more of an expectation for colleges and universities as well. So students are driving that in their own right. In that, they're expecting it, they're asking the hard questions, and when they don't see it, they're taking the actions to change it. So within that, if students are feeling like they're the only one, or that one of very few within their university, and that's one of the ways that I identified, right? I from New York, which is a very diverse city, but the schools that I went to were often in not highly diverse areas. Mm-hmm. And if you're feeling like you're the only one, are you having those questions? Are you empowered to talk to the Office of Diversity and Inclusion at your local university, which oftentimes I would argue focuses primarily on global recruitment of students? But there's an opportunity, right, if they're not focusing on the local experience of students, to start to engage with what you'd like to see. Have that conversation, start a student group, right? Network with other universities, right? To build almost a consortium with best practices from each other, right? What's happening up the street at another university or even in this virtual environment, halfway across, across the state? Find out what other universities are doing so you can bring shared best practices in, so it's not just all on you to have to figure out the how.
Ryan, I think that's such fantastic advice. So are there any final thoughts you'd like to share before we conclude?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you again for this opportunity. And, my final thoughts are, it's just really important to always practice cultural humility within this space.
Mm-hmm.
So, with diversity and inclusion, make sure that you are always being curious and learning about other cultures, other backgrounds, and other experiences. Watch the biases, right? Pay attention to your judgments and seek to understand. Because, diversity is often talked about from the visible aspect, right? Where you can see. But, when you think about an iceberg, which is something that we also often talk about with leaders at LinkedIn, there's visible differences on the top, but there are invisible differences on the bottom, right? So there are segments of individuals that are, having different experiences and backgrounds and create learning opportunities for you to advance your own understanding of this space. And so you have to be careful not to just make some assumptions that someone is or is not, from an underrepresented group. And the last thing is, I often struggle with companies or organizations kind of coding it as, diversity and inclusion, because at the end of the day, no one is homogenous, right? There is no one, we're not all the same, in any way. Again, when you think about that iceberg, right, there are visible differences that you see and invisible differences that you don't see under the water. And so always keep that in mind when you're challenging your assumptions and your biases, and always seek to be curious and understand about someone's background.
Absolutely. Well, Meredith, thank you again so much. Your thoughts have just been very insightful, and I really appreciate you sharing a little bit about your experience and some things that you've learned and how we can better take action on this. So thank you very much, and I hope all the best for you. And viewers, if you have any questions, please feel free to contact us via LinkedIn. But with that, thank you everyone for listening, and have a great day.